Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology and personalities in political life. Gossip is the social glue that binds people and communities together. It creates insiders and outsiders, and it can often help the flow of information when normal channels have perhaps stopped working properly. So to help me psychoanalyze gossip and the part it plays in politics, not least because we have just had several party conferences where gossip has been in full flow, I am delighted to welcome to my couch writer for the Londoner's Diary at the Evening Standard, Robbie Griffiths. Hello, Robbie.
Hi, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Now, we met at one of these infamous party conferences. Do you like going to party conferences, by the way?
I don't know what you thought about it. It was an interesting year this year. Afterwards, we were all drained and exhausted, so I don't think like is the word that we would use. But yes, I think it's a great place to sort of see the health of the parties and see what's going on and who are the big characters. And yes, so yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, and to get the vibe and to feel those stories as they shape, really. I think that's what I found so fascinating, was just watching all the relationships that people had with each other and how they related to their party. And what was happening at the Labour conference was that, yeah, there was a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of upbeat, this could possibly happen. And as a result, maybe there wasn't so much gossip. Were you disappointed in the level of gossip that came out of the Labour conference?
There's always gossip there if you can just dig it out, as I think. But I think, yes, you're right. I think the Labour conference was interesting in that this time it felt like that they had all the business community there. And last year they were excited because they thought that they were doing well and they were going to probably win. This time it's almost like the business community and people like that have heard this and they're all there now. So that was interesting. I was at the big party that I went to. There was the Spectator magazine held a party at the Labour conference for the first time, and obviously Spectator's kind of right of centre magazine. The fact that they're there thinking we need to be meeting and schmoozing these Labour politicians showed that even they think it's pretty likely that the Labour's going to win this time.
That is pretty much a done deal, exactly. But just to go back to something you just said there, you have to get your gossip. Give us an inside track. How do you get gossip? Because you write for can we call it a gossip column?
It's a diary column. So I think some people call it a diary column, but I think you can call it a gossip column. Yeah.
Excellent. So what is your modus operandi, or do people come up to you? Are they so desperate to be in the diary that they already come prepared with their little snippet?
It's a question of looking at what's sort of going on in any given room. I think politicians are unusual in that they kind of want to be written about because they need people to know who they are, and they will come up to you and say, you might want to write this about me, or you might.
No, shameless.
I didn't do that. Like that, but I think they're much ready to. They're ready to be written about, and they want it to be written about in a fun way. And yes, which, yeah.
So they want to control the narrative. So they would be quite happy if you wrote about them in a fun way. But if you found out something that they maybe wanted to keep hidden, or that they thought wasn't public knowledge, they might have a different view about a diary column.
Well, yeah, exactly. It does change. It changes as the story is. But no, in general, I think because the politicians need to have a relationship with the public, and they also need to have a relationship with journalists who are going to write about them in some form or other, then in Westminster, there's a much more knowledge from the politicians that they have to give perhaps these, what you might call kind of diary story snippets about maybe their personal life or kind of quotes about other politicians. And there's a sense that one reason for that is they want the public to know who they are and to convey their kind of sense of personality, because even though we all think we make decisions based on hard economic facts or something else, but there's also an element that you kind of shoot, you're inspired by a leader and they make you go out and post your vote. Or the other thing is that they know that journalists are going to be writing about them for years, and so they want to have a kind of good relationship with different newspapers, so they maybe give them a kind of personal snippet about their lives, which they know that people are interested in, knowing that hopefully then when they announce a policy down the line, that will get a more favorable view. I think it's not as give and take is that, but there's definitely those things are going on.
And it's very strategic, the way that you describe that particular dimension of it within Westminster, or maybe within politics more widely, is that it is strategic. If I build this relationship now, if I give soft information, maybe let's say trivial information, fun information for a diary, later down the line, that might actually help me when I've got something more serious to convey.
Well, I think that's true. Yes, and also it's a way of them building their persona, right? So I think someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg, he has this Victorian or whatever persona that he does. And I think that was sort of slightly honed in the diary columns, because he was someone that would say a kind of slightly old-fashioned type quote to a diary, but he was a character that people found amusing. And now he's, you know, he's been a minister in the government and things like that. And I think Boris Johnson a little bit like that as well. He's a fun character. He's a persona that diaries like writing about, and often diaries write about people before they become, you know, much bigger in the public imagination. So this, I wouldn't give diaries too much credit for these things, but I think that's often the direction of travel. So I've definitely noticed that someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg perhaps honing his image. And I think actually diaries have to maybe be a bit careful and not think just because someone's funny and silly, you should have a little go at them as well, because someone like can build their kind of persona and then later say, well, actually I've got all these views as well, and then the public might be slightly surprised by those views because they thought, oh, it was just a funny persona kind of.
Yes, and actually you're right to identify that the role that it plays, the diary column role, is that the reader then gets a sense of this personality, of this character, as you called it, and that can influence them more than, as you say, maybe policy or the economic issue, although I'm sure economics will be at the forefront of everybody's mind for most of the electorate. But for people who aren't necessarily interested in politics, it is nevertheless a way to make yourself accessible if you are a politician, to be in a diary column, because it then becomes more about relationships, doesn't it? It becomes about what you're saying, who you're talking to, who you're friends with, whether you went to that person's wedding, whether, you know, am I the godparent to that person's child? That actually it then becomes a much more human dimension, and the diary is the perfect vehicle for that.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely one way of types of stories that we do. Another type of story that I do when I came up to the conference this time, I'm sure lots of people saw the video of Nigel Farage and Priti Patel singing at the GB News party together. And there was a kind of marriage of former UKIP guy and then the writer wing of the Tory party. And for me, that would be classed to some extent as a diary story, because that's what I wrote about in the London's Diary that next day. And perhaps you can give an it by covering a party like that. That one was more popular than others. But you can give a sense of who's talking to who, who are the packs that might lead to policies down the line and things like that. So that's another way of doing it, a kind of way of seeing diary stories, who's working together and what type of wing of the party is popular at the moment and things like that.
Yeah, and which tribes are banding up together and who's out on their own, I suppose. Again, it's the knowledge of the playground, isn't it? Gossip is it's actually quite messy, isn't it? I suppose, because we lap up these stories about other people and then we move on to the next story. But for those people who were in that story, who the protagonists of that narrative arc, I suppose, this is their life. And sometimes that life might have been turned upside down by some things that were gossiped about.
I think that could perhaps true of people. And I suppose part of your question is it immoral to do stories about people's private life? I think with politicians, it's a bit different because they present themselves forward to be in public life. And I think it's actually quite a comfortable space to be a diary reporter and not feel those worries, because they to some extent, a lot of the diary stories that we discuss about them is things that they want in the public life, and they want to be discussed in that way. But I mean, certainly there are questions about private lives in other areas, perhaps, of my work.
And do you have a personal barometer around this? Do you, if somebody were to either sidle up to you at a party and say, I've got this brilliant story about me, which again, I really hope I didn't do that. But you might have to remind me that I did. It was very early in the conference, so I'm sure I was on best behavior at that stage. It was the Sunday night. But yeah. Do you have an internal barometer that says that's actually not even funny, or that's not even intriguing enough in terms of like public interest? Or conversely, do you ever sort of think to yourself, holy moly, that is a brilliant story and I cannot wait to write that up? Are you processing that information all the time through your internal
I think it doesn't happen as much as I maybe gave the sense that someone constantly wandering up to me and giving me fantastic I wish that happened more. But I think actually if someone did that, I'd probably, my thought would be, I don't know if I want to be publishing something that, you know,
yeah, why are you giving me this sort of thing?
Well, exactly. Isn't the quote that, you know, it's only news if someone doesn't want it published? So if someone's giving you something, you'd be more wary of it. I think what I suppose I meant about politicians was that they're much more willing to respond if you go up to them and sort of ask, because in a way that's part of their public life, and what they've signed up to do is that they're answerable to us. So they're more like, in terms of my barometer, yes, I suppose it's anything that I find interesting, or kind of the litmus test is, would you tell your sort of mum who's not interested in this story, and could you explain it? That can be a good way of doing it. Or is it one for political anoraks that they'll really find interesting, or is it just funny? Or yeah,
we now all want sight of your mother's WhatsApp conversations with you, actually, which I think would be really entertaining. But I guess it's also about your audience, isn't it? Because as you say, if you're going to write stuff about a party political conference, unless it's a real humdinger of, you know, this person was seen emerging from someone else's bedroom at 3 a.m, the chances are your audience is slightly more political geeks or political anoraks, whereas I'm assuming there is some gossip that transcends that and becomes something that lots of people are really interested in, and then that goes back to the human interest dimension, and it's your job to work out which is which.
Yeah, well, I think Westminster as well is an interesting place in terms of what's gossip and what's not, because, you know, some political stories that we read about are just about policy and who's paying for HS2, etc. But even with stuff like HS2, you know, who was talking to who? Did he film that video before he went to the conference? You know, the personal lives, you know, Matt Hancock groping his aide in his office, is it a diary gossip story, or is it very important because these people are breaking the guidance that they set for the country? So Westminster's a particularly gossipy place as well, because the lobby is quite an odd place. They work all together in the House of Parliament with the politicians, and so there's kind of gossip, people talking to each other at work, and then that becomes stories because they're the thing that people are talking about, and the things that people are doing are of interest to the rest of the public because we pay their wages and they decide the policy for people. So it's an interest. Westminster's a particularly interesting thing for a diary column because it's, yeah.
Yes, because in any workplace, you do get gossip. It doesn't really matter whether it's, you know, a three-man mechanic in a local garage, or whether it's, you know, a massive law firm or investment bank. There are always people that will be gossiped about, but it doesn't necessarily have an impact on the national psyche, as you say. If you discover that the health minister is breaking COVID rules, then that's not just a relationship story, it's a public policy story. So, yeah, I guess there's that blend of something that could be very trivial and something that's incredibly serious.
Someone like Carrie Johnson, who in theory wasn't a public figure, but was friends with kind of SPADs, advisors and things, and supposedly were having them in the flat and you weren't supposed to have parties because it was locked down. She became a very interesting kind of diary figure in a way, because in a way she's not making policy, but in a way she does seem to be quite influential as to what her husband's doing. You know, for example, if Tony Blair and Gordon Brown were like having an argument in 1999 or something, that's interesting because in 5 or 10 years later, one of them would be prime minister, one of them wouldn't, and so these kind of personal things become very
So again, it goes down to those personal relationships, doesn't it? And I think you talk about Westminster in particular, I suppose that whisper network, a lot of sexual impropriety has come to light over the last, let's say, 2 to 3 to 4 years. But my understanding is that there was already quite a strong whisper network of women warning each other about men who, you know, don't be in a cab, in the back of a cab with this person, or they've got wandering hand trouble. And again, something that I experienced in investment banking was that you already knew who were the people to avoid, but that's as far as it went. Nobody ever really called it out. They just warned each other about it. And presumably that's another function of gossip in certain communities, particularly political ones.
Well, I think, yeah, Westminster had a lot of scandals of that nature, which a lot of areas have had. I mean, I don't think I was in the lobby really until about 18 months ago. So I have had less experience of knowing that. But yeah, I think a lot of people in their workplace will know that they share information and say, don't go near that person, or that person's dodgy. And in Westminster, I think that was, and probably still is, more than most places, it seems like, because power seems to have, Westminster seems to have a particular problem with it. So yeah, in terms of that rumor, those rumors going around before they come out, I try and, people ask me, what secrets do you know that you don't publish? I'm not that many, because I try and publish as many as I can, you know. So but I'm sure there's lots and lots of things that people know that are out there that
Well, it's a little bit like Partygate, isn't it? Because you mentioned Matt Hancock, you mentioned Carrie and Boris, that actually the journalists like Pippa Creera who got wind of the parties that were happening, which led to the Partygate scandal, there was this sense of that there must have been that moment of thinking, crikey, this is absolutely massive. Probably they didn't even know that there was more than one party, but even to have one, can you remember the first time where you heard a massive story, whether it was a political one or not, and you just remember thinking, this is a brilliant story?
I think rumours about Carrie Johnson's influence over Number 10 and how much she seemed to be having, for me, that was a big one. I remember thinking, oh, this government's not quite working how I thought it was. And then that slowly, I'm not suggesting that she was in charge by any means, but it slowly understanding how a certain Number 10 operation is working, and then noticing it collapse a few months down the line is quite interesting. So that was one that I remember seeing happen myself. In terms of, like, the Londoners Diary has a long and storied history, including supposedly being edited by a politician, Winston Churchill, back in the day, briefly when his son was in charge. His son went on holiday and he asked Winston Churchill to be in charge. That's what it says on Wikipedia. I don't know if that's true. But the editor...
That's the gossip.
Exactly. He was editor a little while before me, called Sebastian Shakespeare. He was editor of the Londoners Diary for 15 years or something. And I remember that he said his best story was to do with Tony Blair's religion, and I think it was to do with praying with George Bush, which is something that David Frost asked Tony Blair about back in the day. So, and then obviously they went to war together. And so these little snippets that kind of give you a sense of how these people are acting, and even if that wasn't true, it can tell you a kind of story of what the government's like from behind the scenes. So I think gossip stories, one, lots of stories are gossip stories almost, but two, they can really give a sense of what's going to happen down the line. So hopefully Nigel Farage and Priti Patel singing doesn't give us too much future portent of whatever's in store for us. But,
but if it does, we remember where we heard it here first. Finally, I guess I just want to ask you about the actual relationship of the writer and the person with the gossip, because there has been much made recently, for example, when George Osborne got married, to notice who were the journalists who were at that wedding. And some of those journalists were there because they'd actually worked with George Osborne's new wife, because, you know, she had a career in her own right, and it involved working at the BBC, where she did meet lots of journalists and work closely with them. But do you think there's a problem when actually maybe these relationships start, as you say, at the very beginning of someone's career, whether that's the start of your type of career or a politician's career, and then over time you're in lockstep together, and before you know it, someone that you maybe shared a flat with or was a best man at the wedding, it turns out they end up being the prime minister. How does that compromise the ability for a gossip column to flow if the writers and the subjects are too closely entwined?
Well, I don't think it compromises gossip column, because all those stories come out because they all know each other very well. In terms of whether they should be doing that, I think it perhaps does give an impression to the public that there is a kind of establishment, and that can be quite irritating for people. I suppose if journalists like pop between politics and then coming back to journalism and then going politics, you know, Michael Gove was a journalist before, and perhaps did he know to some extent that he was going to do that, and did that affect what he wrote at the time? Yeah. You know, people, I don't know, but I think in terms of probably a column like the Londoner's Diary over the years, the people going to those weddings and whatever, that's great, because they hear things and then the stories come out. So I wouldn't criticise that in my role as Londoner's Diary. In terms of what the public perceive, it probably can be a little bit galling sometimes if they think that journalists are too in with
the kind of... But we're still going to read the column.
Yeah, so read the column. Yeah, hopefully those kind of relationships. It's useful. I think Londoner's Diary is a useful place to kind of maybe spell out those relationships and say, well, here, these are the people who are friends, just so that people know, you know, because otherwise you might, yeah. It might seem like everyone's saying the same thing, but then if you know that they all went to the same party the night before as well, then it's kind of like, maybe it's not a surprise that they're saying the same thing. I don't know.
Corroborative evidence. Thank you very much indeed, Robbie Griffiths, writer for the Londoner's Diary at the Evening Standard, for unpicking all of that gossip. It's been very gossipy. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you for listening. Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all the things that help people hear about On The Couch podcast. And do tell all your friends, and even people who aren't your friends, but maybe you want them to be. This is a podcast for Reaction.